You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. We're a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist lobby. I'm here with Pastor John Kirkwood of Grace Gospel Fellowship, based in Bensonville, Illinois, which is near O'Hare Airport. John, welcome. Welcome back.
Good to be back, brother.
And folks, as the people who listen to us a lot know, we sort of switched from being on local Christian radio in Chicago to now doing a podcast. We hope to make it a better broadcast with more clips. And we've got a lot to talk about. It's been a while since we broadcast, and we're very happy today to be interviewing Peter Sprigg, who is one of the leading pro-family advocates, probably the leading in Washington, D.C., in the whole world on this issue of homosexuality. He does other things, but he does a lot on that, and he does a good job of it. Peter, are you on the line?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are happy to have you, and I'm also happy that we're going to do three separate interviews with you because, Peter, you've done a lot of great work on this issue. And first of all, we want to get to know you. I had worked at Family Research Council in D.C., and you are now a senior fellow for policy studies. How much of your work involves, sort of writing and advocating against the activist agenda, the LGBT, as it's called? How much of your work is around this homosexual issue?
Well, certainly the majority of my work involves this issue. I'm within the policy department at Family Research Council, which is the department that does most of the public policy research and so forth. I'm the leading analyst and commentator on the homosexual issue and the issue of same-sex marriage. So I probably spend at least two-thirds to three-quarters of my time on this issue, and then part of my time I deal with other issues of marriage and family structure in general, and with issues of religious liberty to some extent, and to some extent with issues of arts and entertainment.
Right.
But because this is such a huge issue, I will make one point. The reason why this is a huge issue is not because we as conservatives are obsessed with homosexuality. It's because the homosexual activists are obsessed with radically transforming our society.
That's right.
And we're determined to push back against that. So I wish I could spend less time on this issue and more time on other issues, but that would require a little bit of truce on the part of the homosexual activists.
Yeah, and it's a truce, and it's a truce that's never going to come. But we are thankful for the work that you do because you do a good job of it. Now Peter, you have an interesting background. First of all, how many kids and where do you live?
Well, I live in Maryland, in a suburban Washington, D.C. area in Maryland, and I have just one child of my own, a son who is now 15 years old. He's a freshman, just finished his freshman year of high school.
Okay, and we'll get to some of your Maryland work as well, but you once were a pastor, correct?
Yes.
Tell us how you evolved into the public policy world from that world.
Well, my story is an interesting one. I'll try to fit within your first 12 minutes.
Give us the condensed version.
Because I actually, when I was young, when I was in high school and college, I was very interested in politics, but I was completely on the other side of the fence from where I am now. I was very much a liberal Democrat.
Don't tell me Peter Sprigg was once a hippie.
Not a hippie. Actually, it was funny. In the 1972 presidential election, I was 15 years old at the time, and I was a zealot for McGovern. But I was very straight in the way I dressed and so forth. I actually one time had somebody say they didn't believe me. I was wearing a McGovern button. And they say, you don't look like a McGovern supporter. You look like a Nixon supporter.
So now what is this, ex-McGovernites for the family? Is that that's what you're...
Right. I went to college at Drew University in New Jersey, and I majored in economics and political science. I did a semester in Washington when I was a college student, and interned with my local congressman from my hometown, from Massachusetts, where I was living at that time, who happened to be Robert Drinan, who was a very liberal Democratic member of the House, who also was a Jesuit priest. And he had been elected to Congress on a platform opposing the Vietnam War in 1970, and was the first member of the House to introduce a resolution of impeachment against Richard Nixon. He had all the liberal credentials you could want. And so I graduated from college in 1979, and then in early 1980, I got a job working in his district office, Congressman Drinan's district office in Massachusetts. But then about 4 months later, in early May, I believe it was, of 1980, Pope John Paul II issued an order saying he did not want Catholic priests to serve in elective office anymore. And so Congressman Drinan agreed to that and suspended his campaign for re-election and simply served out the rest of that term. So I sometimes have joked that I may be the only American Baptist who ever lost his job because of an order of the Pope. But after that, I decided to run for office myself in 1981 in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. I ran for the school committee. Unfortunately for me, I lost that election, and that began a real period of soul-searching for me, first in terms of my career goals, but then later in a spiritual sense as well. And that period of soul-searching kind of culminated in June of 1982 in me going forward at a Billy Graham crusade in Boston and committing my life to Christ. Although I had grown up in the church and even been active in my church, I hadn't really made a personal commitment of my life to Christ until that time. I was 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 months after that, I went into full-time ministry with a Christian drama ministry called Covenant Players. I'd been interested in drama in high school and college and in community theater, but had never thought about doing it professionally until I realized I could do it as a ministry as well. And I joined Covenant Players and ended up staying in that ministry for 10 and a half years. Met my wife, Kristen, in that ministry, and so we got married about halfway through that period and toured together as a married couple the last 5 years or so, 5.5 years. But eventually we got to the point where we didn't want to live that itinerant lifestyle anymore. We were thinking about wanting to have a family, and I wanted to stay in ministry, but I wasn't sure exactly what ministry to do. But made the decision to go to seminary. I attended Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in Massachusetts, which is a very distinguished independent evangelical seminary, not affiliated with a particular denomination. And I got the Master of Divinity degree in 1997, and then went into the pastorate and accepted a call to a church in upstate New York. I was pastor of Clifton Park Center Baptist Church in Clifton Park, New York. But after maybe 2.5 years as a pastor, I began to feel that that wasn't perhaps the best use of my gifts either, and I began to kind of look at myself and ask, what do I really want to do with my life? And there were two things. One, I wanted to be able to write more, and so I had thought about trying to get a job with a Christian magazine, something like that. But then I also had become interested in the these so-called culture war issues. Now, I will say that my political conversion was a longer and more gradual process than my spiritual conversion.
Right.
My spiritual conversion took place in a matter of months. My political conversion took place over a couple of decades. But I had certainly grown more conservative and, as a Christian, more alarmed about the state of our culture. And in fact, Pete, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I had been educated by, when I became a pastor, someone who was actually not even a member of our church, but was a father of someone, the father of a missionary who was supported by our church, began forwarding to me the email Culture Facts from Family Research Council,
right,
which you were writing for and Bob Knight was writing for and so forth. And eventually I just, I told him, you don't need to forward these to me anymore. I entered my own subscription. So that I really was educated a lot by the Culture Studies Department of Family Research Council, and
because FRC's been at this a long time.
And
think you'd end up there?
Well, no. I mean, I wouldn't have ever thought that. But then one day I was looking at the FRC website and actually, I think I was looking for a sermon illustration on one of these issues, and I saw a button that said job opportunities, and so I clicked that, and there was a posting for the job of Senior Director of Culture Studies, and I applied. And when I applied, I didn't think I would have much of a chance of getting the job. I thought, you know, they're going to want somebody who's been in Washington for the last 10 years, and I have this strange resume of having been, you know, an actor and a pastor, and my limited political experience was a long time ago and completely on the other side of the fence. You know, I thought, oh, they're not going to want me. But lo and behold, I got the job and came to work at FRC in July of 2001, and I've been here ever since. So now I look back on it, and I think I tell people I'm on my fourth career and my third ministry. The three previous careers were all very different from each other. Brief work in politics after college, and then as an actor / missionary with Covenant Players, and then as a pastor.
But here's
they
the
all contribute. So.
Well, here's the problem, Peter. We know that because you're a committed guy and you're principled, that you're probably going to spend the rest of your life fighting this gay agenda.
Well,
but we got 10 seconds
left. There aren't many people willing to
That's
do it.
That's right. We're talking to Peter Sprigg, who's a senior fellow in the Cultural Studies Department at the Family Research Council. We'll be right back after the break in about a minute.
Sometimes homosexual activists will argue that children raised by homosexual parents are no different from children raised by heterosexual parents. Unfortunately, the evidence simply does not support that. And there was a study conducted recently which looked at the family histories of 262 children raised by homosexual fathers or lesbian mothers. And it found that the percentages of children of homosexual parents who themselves became something other than heterosexual, gay, lesbian, bisexual, or unsure of their sexual orientation, ranged from 16% of those children to as high as 57% of those children. Daughters of lesbian mothers had the highest rates, anywhere from 33 to 57%. Just to understand, the percentage of the total American population that identify themselves as either homosexual or bisexual was 3.5%, according to a very recent study. If you want to talk about the ratio, it's somewhere from 5 to 15 times as likely to be homosexual or bisexual as the general population. Children raised by homosexual parents turn out very differently from children raised by heterosexual parents.
Folks, that was just a clip you heard from an FRC documentary called The Problem of Same-Sex Marriage, and that was Peter Sprigg we were listening to. Peter, when did that come out?
That was done perhaps about a year and a half or 2 years ago, I believe. We actually filmed that.
Well, now we have this incredible new study, and I'm going to let you describe it, by a scholar named Mark Regnerus, I believe he's with the University of Texas.
Yes.
And this is the most thorough study to date, correct me if I'm wrong, on the effects of same-sex parenting. And, of course, it has the liberals and the gay activists going nuts. Tell us about this new study, which just came out, Peter, in Social Science Research Journal.
Yes. Well, to give a little of the background, partly I mentioned it in that clip, but throughout the debate, particularly the debate about same-sex marriage, we We, on the pro-family side, have been arguing that the research clearly shows that children do best when raised by their own biological mother and father who are committed to one another in a lifelong marriage. There's a massive research that's shown that. Now, the homosexual activists respond to that by saying, sometimes they respond by saying, you're lying, which just shows how that they're ignorant. But but the ones who are a little more knowledgeable say, but that research was comparing those kids from the married heterosexual parent families to children of divorce or single-parent households. It wasn't comparing them to kids raised by loving same-sex couples. And so then they point to their own body of research on same-sex parenting, which reportedly shows very few differences or few significant differences or important or negative differences between children raised by homosexuals and children raised by heterosexuals. However, then we have pointed out those studies focused specifically on homosexual parenting, have for the most part had very small sample sizes, had samples that were not representative of the population. They use what's called a convenience sample, meaning they might put an ad in the local gay newspaper and say, we're doing a study of gay parenting. Are you gay? Do you have children? Come participate. The people who are going to respond to an ad like that are not going to be representative of the population as a whole.
Right. And haven't a lot of those studies been done by actual either pro-homosexual advocates or homosexuals themselves, like Charlotte Patterson?
Exactly,
at University of Virginia.
Yes, that's a very important point as well. And so we've argued that none of those studies are have enough scientific credibility or validity to be able to rely on them at all. Well, now, so you had this, and even in some of the articles accompanying this study that just came out this week, they mentioned there was this conundrum. They describe it as a conundrum. You had this one body of research showing children do best with married mother and father. You had this other body of research which purportedly showed that children raised by homosexuals do just the same, which would mean that they were the sole exception to this massive body of evidence on family structure. And this study has finally sort of bridged that gap by looking directly at children raised by homosexual parents in a study that has a large sample that is a representative population-based sample. And it found that the no differences claim, the claim that there's no difference between children raised by homosexuals and heterosexuals, is simply not true. And it found that
it's astonishing, Peter. Go through the categories. It's unbelievable that this type of research is only coming to the fore now.
Yes, and Regnerus measured this measured the outcomes of 40 different variables. Now, I should mention how this data was collected. This is significant, too, because a lot of the previous pro-homosexual parenting studies, if you will, were the data was collected either by asking the parents themselves how their children were doing. So I call that the Lake Wobegon approach, where, you know, all the children are above average. And or asking the children while still in childhood and still right. in the home with their homosexual parent. This study was done by interviewing young adults ages 18 to 39, I believe it was, who were raised by and asking these young adults about the family structure of their family growing up. And so you don't have the bias of the parental self-report or even of the child self-report while they're still in the middle of being, you know, raised by the parent. We found that, well, first of all, I went through the study and found that the children raised by both lesbian mothers or gay fathers, which are broken out separately in this study, did worse than the children raised by what he refers to as the intact biological family, meaning the biological mother and biological father who are married to one another, The children of the homosexual parents did worse on every one of the 40 measures except for one. The children of gay fathers were actually more likely to have voted in the last presidential election. Mm. That was the only exception, which should be something that pro-family voters need to be alerted to. But
we're kind of aware of that, those of us in the arena.
But
I mean, go through some of these markers, Peter. This is unbelievable. I've got a Washington Times story up here, and they've got an interesting graphic. You know, in your clip, you talked about identifying homosexual as homosexual. Of course, that's one area. But, I mean, some of these are horrifying, such as, look at this one, was ever touched sexually by a parent or other adult. And it says married parents, children with married parents, the intact biological family, as you said, 2% versus lesbian mothers, 23%. Talk about that kind of statistic.
Yeah, I think that may have been the single largest difference in terms of the ratio in the entire study. More than 10 times, children of lesbian mothers more than 10 times more likely to report having been touched sexually by a parent or adult caretaker while they were growing up. They were also, on another question, have you ever been forced to have sex against your will? The answer for those raised in an intact biological family was 8%. Those raised by a lesbian mother was 31%. Those raised by a gay father was 25%.
So is that I mean, is that like for a lesbian family that might be one of the explain what that means? Is that, could that be a male friend in the house, or is it female to male female to girl pedophilia? Explain these statistics.
Well, that's one of the things that's not entirely clear is those kind of details, those kind of minute granular details of what they're talking about is not entirely clear. They just had this question. Basically, it's a yes or no question. Did this ever happen to you? And they didn't ask, I don't think, the details about the circumstances. It was somewhat surprising. I mean, I think you and I have both looked at the research on child sexual abuse and the link to homosexuality. This is one of the things that makes the homosexual activists most angry when we assert that there is a link there. But I did find it interesting because the research I've done previously on this showed that most child sexual abuse is committed by men, regardless of whether the sex of the victim. In this case, the likelihood of having been touched sexually by a parent or adult caretaker was higher among children with lesbian mothers than among those with gay fathers. The gay fathers, it was 6%, which is still three times what it was with the intact biological family, but not anywhere close to the 23% among the lesbian mothers.
But it cries out for more research.
It does cry out for more research. Now, the other thing is
Hold on, Peter, before you go on, I mean, let's put this in perspective, guys. The propaganda, and John here with John Kirkwood of Grace Gospel Fellowship, we have been hearing for, it's decades now, and it has progressed. Peter, from one point they said, oh, it's the same, and then in recent years, I think even the study alludes to this, it says children from lesbian parents or same-sex parents do better than other children, and than children raised in normal. I mean, they do better than us.
Right. Yeah, I have seen that. Yeah.
So it's sort of like escalating. You know, it's like the lie that keeps on growing. Yeah, we're better parents, you know, without a mother or a father. You know, it's and so, I mean, we want to go point by point on this, but and we've only got 20 seconds left, Peter. But I mean, he is going to come under immense attack, and he already is, by the homosexual activists.
Yes, there's no question about that. But the statistical power of this study is very strong.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. We're coming right back with Peter Sprigg, who's a senior fellow at the Culture Studies Department at the Family Research Council. We'll be right back.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking to Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council. Peter has done yeoman's work defending family values. He's one of the leading advocates on the other side of the homosexual lobby. Yes, there are two sides of the debate. Peter, I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, you probably get less invites to major media now than when you first began at FRC because the pro-homosexual activists working with the media are trying to say, look, there is no other side right. to this issue, correct?
Well, there is an active effort to keep pro-family spokesmen on the issue of homosexuality from even being invited on, particularly on the major TV networks. GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, has their list of the 32 leading anti-gay commentators, which is effectively a blacklist,
yes,
saying you should not invite these people on without notifying your audience that they are hate-filled bigots. You know, and
I think we're both on that list.
Yeah, one of the tremendous things we saw Chris Matthews say recently. Actually, he took him on his show and said, you guys want to censor people.
Yeah, now, you know, I think, we played that clip, and I think now Christopher Matthews, they're working on him hard.
Yeah.
They have labeled, the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled Family Research Council a so-called hate group, like
right.
Americans for Truth. This is an active campaign, and obviously, in fact, they're actually quite open about it. They want to avoid the dissemination of our values. And so they take somebody like Peter Sprigg, who's an effective advocate on our side, and they basically try to cast him as the moral equivalent of a racist. Even though I've met Peter in person, you're a great guy, and I don't think you'd there's a hateful bone in your body, but it's the ideological definition of hate. It's not any objective criteria.
No.
The most objectively, you could say that the most hateful people in this debate are radical activists like Wayne Besson.
It's right out of the Saul Alinsky playbook to demonize an individual. And it's what James Carville did with the special counsel.
His name escapes us.
We saw it happen live, Peter. We were in a chapel in Elmhurst College here, and Dan Savage literally savaged Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council.
Yes. Yeah.
And it just filled with lies, saying Tony Perkins wants to stand on a body of dead gay boys and just insane things. But the thing is, the press allow them to run with this. The press is complicit.
Yeah, and Peter, you must have given a lot of thought to, I mean, how do you, and we'll get back to the study, because this is extremely important, and you've read the studies, but it's difficult to get back to a truth position when you've got the major media sort of acting as a blockers for the homosexual agenda. How do you get around that?
I will say that at least as far as Family Research Council is concerned, and as far as Tony Perkins, my boss, the president of Family Research Council, is concerned, it seems like the efforts to keep us off the air have not been successful. I mean, Tony has been a regular commentator on a number of the networks, including CNN, including MSNBC. CNN was targeted at one point shortly after the after the SPLC designation came out, and FRC was not on CNN for about 6 months, any of our spokespeople. But then that wall eventually broke down, and so Tony's been asked to comment, particularly on the presidential election, not necessarily specifically on this issue. So I do think some in the media, even the liberals like Chris Matthews, resist the idea of censoring particular points of view. I think it has gotten a little bit better, but of course, they paint, the picture they paint of us is a caricature, and
yes.
and it amounts to, of course, they use this label of hate, implying that we can only be motivated by hate. In fact, we are motivated by love because we are. Let me put it this way: the definition of love is to desire the best for someone and to act to bring that about. The definition of love is not to encourage someone to do whatever they feel like doing.
Yeah.
That's not love. Anybody who's a parent knows that that's not the definition of love. A parent who loves their children will not treat their children that way by saying, do whatever you want to do. I want you to be happy by, indulging every desire that you may
right.
experience.
You don't show your love to an alcoholic by promising a free bottle of whiskey to him every month. I mean, that's not real love.
So true love is to desire the best for someone and act to bring that about. Now, that is what we're doing with people who have same-sex attractions, because we believe that it is harmful to the people who engage in it. Homosexual conduct, the choice to engage in actual homosexual acts and homosexual relationships, is harmful to the people who engage in it, as well as to society at large. So it is love which motivates us to tell them, refrain from that behavior, abstain from that behavior. It is not in your best interest. And we are totally backed up. It's not just a matter of opinion. We're totally backed up by the health data in particular on the physical health risks of engaging in homosexual conduct, of which the most obvious, although increasingly I've become aware that the younger generation doesn't even realize this, but the most obvious is the risk of HIV and AIDS, and
they're phenomenally ignorant, Peter, and that's where why people like what you're doing is so important. Now, on that point, let's go back to the study. One of the questions that Regnerus asked, Mark Regnerus, a scholar at the University of Texas, was, "Have you ever had a sexually transmitted infection?" Children from biological married parents, 8%, lesbian mothers, 20%. And it goes on and on. I mean, he found all these differences.
Yes. Particularly, all of the questions relating to sexuality, there were stark differences. Now, of course, there's all of this statistical analysis in terms of determining whether something is statistically significant. So under that scientific standard, not all of the differences were statistically significant, but there were differences nevertheless in all these cases. And in a number of the ones that were statistically significant, it was not only by a direct one-to-one comparison, but also when controlling for other factors, other socioeconomic factors and so forth. So, for example, it's not just because married parents have higher incomes that their children do better. Even at the same income level, the children of married parents do better than the children of homosexual parents and so forth. All of that is controlled for, and the findings are very dramatic.
All right, now, Peter, I'm sorry.
Peter, one of the critics of this study, a professor, Cynthia Osborne from University of Texas at Austin, suggested that maybe the bad showing among lesbian mothers was due to another measurement that wasn't regarded in the study. She says whether same-sex parenting causes the observed differences cannot be determined from Regnerus's descriptive analysis. Children of lesbian mothers might have lived in many different family structures, and it is impossible to isolate the effects of living with a lesbian mother from experiencing, for example, divorce, remarriage, or living with a single parent. Or it is quite possible that the effect derives entirely from the stigma attached to such relationships and to the legal prohibitions that prevent same-sex couples from entering and maintaining normal relationships. So it's either what happened before the lesbian relationship, or it's your fault, Peter, both of you,
right,
for putting a stigma on it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because there is some truth to the question about the other relationships, because this report, at least what the database that's been developed, needs to be explored more fully. This particular paper that's been published does not give us detailed information about you know, how long the person, how long the parent was in the same-sex relationship, how old the child was when the parent was in the same-sex relationship, and so forth. So it is quite possible, and this is a very common pattern of relationships for, is that often a woman will be in a heterosexual marriage right. to a man. She will conceive and bear biological children with her husband, and then at some point, either before or after deciding that she's a lesbian, she divorces her husband, who is the father of her children, and then enters into a homosexual relationship with a woman. And so they're arguing, well, maybe it's the divorce that causes the problem, not the fact that she's a lesbian. Can we
say the problem that she says she's a lesbian? It always kills me, these women, you know, they live a whole life, a heterosexual married life, have children, and then they decide, and a lot of them kind of imply that they were always lesbians. It's changed behavior.
Well, yes, and that's particularly true with women, that there's a great deal of fluidity in their sexuality. The idea of people being born gay and never changing is, I mean, it's a falsehood across the board, but it simply can't be credibly even argued with respect to women, given the evidence about the fluidity of their sexual attractions. But see, the underlying point here for me is homosexual relationships, homosexual conduct is always associated with instability, mm-hmm. with unstable relationships. You see, they're saying that the argument is, well, it's not because they were lesbian, it's because they had been through a number of different family structures in the course of their childhood, and they suffered this instability, and that was what caused it. But that's the whole point. Instability is almost inherent to the homosexual lifestyle.
Yeah, and we see that, and we don't. It's covered more in homosexual male relationships than lesbian relationships, but there's a lot of instability among these lesbian relationships, correct?
Right, and there's been other research which has documented that. So, you know, I suppose some of the homosexual activists may be saying, well, you know, if they adopted a child at birth, or if they conceived a child through, artificial reproductive technology and raised that child from birth, then they wouldn't have these problems. But those samples, again, are so minuscule it's hard to find them.
Okay, after the break, well, Peter, we're going to talk to you about another study in the same journal which challenges the credibility of past studies on gay adoption and gay parenting. We'll be right back.
Ask you, Peter, do you think people choose to be gay?
People do not choose to have same-sex attractions, but they do choose to engage in homosexual conduct. And that's conduct also, which incidentally is against the law within the military. It violates the Uniform Code of Military Justice. It doesn't make any sense for us to be actively recruiting people who are going to violate the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Do you think we should outlaw gay behavior?
Well, I think certainly
I'm just asking you, should we outlaw gay behavior?
I think that the Supreme Court decision in Lawrence v. Texas, which overturned the sodomy laws in this country, was wrongly decided. I think there would be a place for criminal sanctions against homosexual behavior.
So we should outlaw gay behavior?
Yes.
So you didn't follow his lead, Peter, and say it just how he wanted you to say it.
Well, that's a classic example of a skilled interviewer, pinning you down to a position and not accepting the way that I wanted to frame it. Let me say about that, because that's gotten a lot of attention from the gay activists and so forth, neither I nor the Family Research Council is making any effort or plans to make any effort to recriminalize homosexuality in the civilian world in the United States. We did think that the Lawrence v. Texas decision was wrongly decided, as did three Supreme Court justices. Because we think that the tangible, objective, and measurable harms associated with homosexual conduct, justify efforts to try to discourage it. Now, trying to discourage it using the criminal law has been taken off the table by the Supreme Court in this country. We're not doing anything to put it back on the table, but we do think that the underlying principle is that homosexual conduct is harmful, and we should be trying to discourage it rather than to affirm and celebrate it.
Yes, and I agree with you about the Lawrence decision. Of course, most of the pro-family movement did, and I think if it ever was recriminalized, Peter, it would be on a local level. You're not going to see if the Supreme Court decision was overturned or whatnot, but certainly you're not going to see a sodomy law passed in New York City or Chicago,
right,
for that matter. But there might, you know, the citizens in Texas, who knows, may decide that they, for example, want to have stronger sanctions against public sex, or they want to close down homosexual bathhouses, which certainly would be a solid public policy move to close down the bathhouses, since the bathhouses were, basically a breeding ground for, you know, helped catalyze the AIDS crisis.
Right. And so,
a guy like Christopher Matthews wants to make one of his main goals in life is to make Peter Sprigg look like a fool.
Yeah.
And when you're up in that, that's the crucible there. You know, that's when they want to get you, and you can't really explicate your position whatever it is, a 30-second soundbite with Christopher Matthews badgering you. So,
right. Well, so that interview was taken by the homosexual activists and bloggers and so forth, as meaning that Peter Sprigg, you know, wants to throw every gay person in jail.
Exactly.
Every gay person in America should be in jail. That's absolutely not what I believe. It's not what I said. And nevertheless, that was how it was taken.
I do think they're in a panic. I think studies like this, the ones you guys are bringing up, I think the problem with same-sex marriage documentary that the FRC came out with does have them in, I don't want to say all lathered up, but in a panic, because you have professors coming out of the woodwork trying to dismiss this work. This is Pennsylvania State University Paul Amato saying, if growing up with gay and lesbian parents were catastrophic for children, even studies based on small, convenient samples would have shown this by now. If differences exist between children with gay, lesbian, and heterosexual parents, they are likely to be small or moderate in magnitude. And then he adds, perhaps comparable to those revealed in the research literature on children and divorce.
Well, let's go right into that, Peter. You told us in the break about the second study in this social science research journal, which analyzed some of the previous studies on homosexual parenting. Talk about that. This is a study by Lauren Marks.
Right. Lauren Marks is with the Louisiana State University, and he points out that in 2005, the American Psychological Association issued an official brief on lesbian and gay parenting, and their summary conclusion was this, quote, not a single study has found children of lesbian or gay parents to be disadvantaged in any significant respect relative to children of heterosexual parents, close quote. They cited in the footnotes and so forth 59 separate studies that had been published prior to that time on the issue of homosexual parenting. And
what's the chief bias that they found? What was the major form of bias that those so-called gay parenting studies showed demonstrated?
Well, I think he went through seven key questions in terms of the methodology. This is the Marx paper is not trying to answer the question of how do children of of homosexual parents do, but simply to say, is this body of literature something we can rely on? First of all, he said they were not the samples were not representative or diverse. They were convenient samples and very small samples, small numbers, generally white, urban, and middle to upper class lesbians. Very few studies of homosexual fathers as well. So that gives them limited value in drawing any sort of conclusions. Many of them had no heterosexual comparison group. Okay, you need to have a straightforward comparison group. And when they did have a comparison group, they often don't compare with married biological parents.
Right.
Okay, they're comparing with other non-intact family structures, like divorced lesbians versus divorced heterosexuals,
right,
and so forth.
And yet these studies, Peter, and we've all experienced this, you often hear advocates and even professional homosexual activists say sort of matter-of-factly that the studies, it's done. The studies have proven that there's no effect, or we or children of gay parents are even better situated than in life than other parents. We hear this all the time.
Right. And I mean, that's simply false. I mean, if you go by any reasonable standard of scientific proof, these studies, if anything, have proved nothing. I mean, I hate to be so blunt, but they prove nothing about how children do. But they do indicate also, a lot of times I mean, you hear this phrase two different ways. Sometimes they say they're not disadvantaged at all, and other times they'll say there are no differences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the no differences claim is clearly false also, even from some of these studies.
Right.
As Judith Stacy, who's a pro-homosexual researcher, pointed out in a paper 10 years ago, and she's one of these people who because they're liberal pro-homosexual activists, they get very angry when we quote their research. But, you know, their research found things that doesn't serve the political interests of the homosexual agenda. And so they made the mistake of being honest on one occasion, and they're paying the price for it ever since. You know?
Peter, we've got 30 seconds now to the break, and I thank you for coming on. Tell us, give us a ray of hope for fighting this in 20 seconds. Here's a challenge, a ray of hope for how people can take on this agenda.
Well, people need to not be afraid to speak out. I heard someone talk about the spiral of silence. I think we're in a situation where actually the majority of Americans still agree with us. They agree with us that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. They agree with us that people should not have homosexual relations. But increasingly, they are afraid to say that in public. And because they are silent, people get the impression that the public is more pro-homosexual,
yes,
than they are. So we need to speak out. We've done well on the marriage issue in terms of passing marriage amendments and referenda in every state where they've been on the ballot. In the privacy of a ballot booth, they make that clear,
okay,
that they reject the homosexual agenda. But I hope people would have the courage to speak out.
Well, thank you for your courage, Peter, and we'll be talking to you next week. The website is www.frc.org, and ours is americansfortruth.org. Thanks so much, Peter.
Thank you.
God bless. Okay. Thanks again for joining us with the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm here with Pastor John Kirkwood, and I'm Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth. We'll join you next week for part two of our interview with Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council. Check back to the website at americansfortruth.org, americansfortruth.org. We'll see you next week.